This is Radio Influence.
He got him in the white trunks. He heard it.
That's beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the count.
Wow.
And you think it's a mention. And it's all over. It's all over. First round knockout.
Big
he's out. Rich Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
The Korean Zombie is back as Chan Sung Jung stepped into the UFC Octagon this past Saturday night in Houston, Texas for the first time in 1,281 days as he defeated Dennis Bermudez by knockout in the opening round in the main event of UFC Fight Night 104. And Daniel Galvan and I are going to break down this UFC fight card on this episode of the MMA Report post-fight podcast. Daniel and I will be answering your questions and comments submitted on social media and talking about everything that happened at the Toyo Center on Saturday night. Now, before we bring in Dan, I want to let you know about our sponsor, Fight TV. Fight is the go-to app for MMA fans and practitioners, live pay-per-views, TV tapings, full-length matches, interviews, movies, and documentaries. Get a front-row seat to live wrestling, MMA, and boxing action anytime, any place. Get Fight free and see what's streaming now for you. Watch MMA, wrestling, and boxing live on the screen of your choice, phone, tablet, or TV using just the Fight app. Download Fight free today by going to fightfite.tv/radioinfluence/. Once again, that is fightfite.tv/radioinfluence/. That link is available on radioinfluence.com. Of course, you can always hear this podcast on radioinfluence.com, also iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. Just search the MMA Report. Daniel, how's it going, man?
It's going good, Jason. I was reminded why I am a fan of this sport, because I thoroughly enjoyed this UFC, but what made this one stick out, and I love it when cards do this, it's when they make me feel stupid. Because if you go back and listen to a pre-fight show, we're going to look pretty stupid when you look at what happened on this main card, man. For one, the Korean Zombie came back, looked great. Granted, Dennis Bermudez, you know, had some nice moments. We did not predict that happening. And two, Volkan Ozdemir comes in, beats Ovin St. Preux. And then most importantly, in that co-main event, we did not make a compelling case for how Felice Herrick was going to win that fight. We saw that totally Alexa Grasso's way. And here we are on Monday talking about Felice Herrick not only winning, but winning convincingly in those first two rounds. So, you know, I enjoy eating the crow, but I always think it's important to remember what the narratives were before the fight card actually took place, and then what happened. Because, you know, much like there was a football game on Sunday, Jason. I don't know if you're aware. But, I mean, we had 2 weeks of narrative building the whole time, Jason. And it was all about how high scoring it was going to be. It ended up fairly high scoring. But one quarter in, it was 0-0 or something like that. And it was all about how the Patriots are going to blow out the Falcons. And the Falcons were in control up until the great comeback. So this whole weekend in sports between mixed martial arts and football, it was kind of one big reminder that all the pre-fight hype, all the hubbub, all the previews, they're really, really irrelevant.
Yeah, the games or the fights have to go down, and I do wonder how many Patriot fans maybe turned that game off in the third quarter. If you're a Patriots fan and you turned that game off in the third quarter and you woke up this morning to realize that your team won the Super Bowl, man, how are you feeling?
First off, you don't admit it to anybody. The only Patriots fan that can't get away with that would probably be Donald Trump, who there's just people are following him, so they reported him leaving his dinner in the third quarter. Although he's president, so maybe he has something.
I'll give you a story. This goes back before I started working for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah.
And me and my brother had season tickets, and you know we were playing the Colts on Monday night. This was the year after won the Super Bowl. So it was Dungy's first game coming back to face the Bucs. And the Bucs were up big in the third quarter. Our brother looks because, man, I got to go work early. I'm going to head home. Next morning he calls me. He goes, "We lost?" I go, "Yeah, we lost, man." I go, "That was a rough night." You know, it's just – and It was one of those things on social media. You know, it's kind of like, you know, when there's UFC fight cards where, you know, on paper you're just like, oh man, you know, not exactly, you know, well, this week UFC 208. But you're ultimately hoping that it, on paper you're like, eh, not necessarily the greatest. You just hope it's a great fight card, you know. And that's why, you know, for the Super Bowl started, that's why I put on my Facebook and on my Twitter, it's like, hey, you know, I don't have a dog in this fight. I don't really care who wins. I just hope it's a great game. Now it's 28-3. You're kind of like, oh man, I'm a little tired. Like, do I call it a night? But I did watch the entire game, and right when they went to overtime and the Patriots won the coin toss, I go, oh, it's over. Just start the parade for the Patriots, because they're going to win this thing. Because I mean, look, whether you like or hate the Patriots, one thing you say about them, and we'll get into what happened in the UFC card, we'll just kind of leave it this: Bill Belichick, greatest coach of all time; Tom Brady, greatest quarterback of all time. You can hate him, but you got to admit it. That, you know, when you win five Super Bowls, you're the greatest.
And I tell you what, to make the transition back to mixed martial arts, whether you love him or hate Dana White, just know that whenever he's watching sports, he's happier than you are, because he's a Boston sports fan. So he's experienced more enjoyment watching his sports team than I think all of us will combine. Because, man, if you were born in the city of Boston and you were raised as a sports fan, I congratulate you. And if you picked up these teams because they were winning, I want you to fight the Korean Zombie. That's what I want you to do.
And you know, mentioning about Dana White, kind of transition into something he said post-fight about the Korean Zombie. You know, he talked about how great he looked. And I think great is not the word I would say with Korean Zombie. I thought he looked good for a guy who had been away for 3 years. I thought that before, you know, that uppercut that knocks out Dennis Bermudez, I thought that was a fight that Dennis Bermudez was winning. I thought he was getting the better of the action, but ultimately, you know, and when you know you're facing a guy that likely is going to try to get that fight to the ground, you know, at some point that head's going to duck, and man, just a beautiful uppercut land by the Korean Zombie.
Man, that is a tough one to go back and renegotiate, because you're right in that the beginning portion of that fight, and we're talking about a fight that didn't even last 3 minutes, right? But it was Bermudez looking good early. The tide appeared to be changing up until the finish, because it did appear as though Chan Sung Jung had really found a nice way of truly dictating the pace. And I think that's where Dennis got in trouble, is he was starting to fight the fight on Jung's terms. A lot of Dennis's strikes were kind of a direct reaction of the movement that was happening, and he allowed his hands to stay in there too long. Jung landed the uppercut. The question is, if Jung had not kind of got that knockout, was that just going to be the trend for the next two rounds? We don't really know, but I will say it was a solid performance out of Jung. You know, in terms of, like, when you go and you look at his career, I want to say in the UFC that's just his second knockout victory. I wouldn't say it's like an A+, but I think an A- is certainly warranted. And I tell you what, when Chan Sung Jung takes that report card with an A- to his parents, they'll be very, very happy, because he has not competed since 2013. And again, this was the type of performance that is something you can make sense in your head with hindsight. It was just so hard, Jason, I think, for anybody to go out on a limb and say that this man, this amazing man, the Korean Zombie, was going to be able to go out and get a first-round finish just because of how long he has been away from the cage. I mean, there's been a few instances, and the one that comes to mind is Brock Lesnar's win over Mark Hunt, and I'm sure there have been other ones, but very rarely do you see people step away for a significant period of time like this and not really miss a beat when they come back. I mean, without a doubt, he came back and he got the most impressive win in his career.
And I saw the Korean Zombie tweeted at Dominic Cruz and talked about, you know, how he really took to heart what Dominic had said about ring rust. And, of course, Dominic has been very open in saying that ring rust is a mental thing. You know, it's all in your head. It's, you know, and a lot of fighters, you know, and it seems fighters are kind of split on the whole ring rust thing. But a lot of fighters believe it's, hey, if you're constantly in the gym, you know, ring rust is not really a thing. But it's an amazing win for the Korean Zombie. We got this question from @RyanThomasMMA. He says, a lot of people calling for the Korean Zombie versus Cub Swanson. How about the Korean Zombie versus Yair Rodriguez? A real litmus test for Yair and another action fight for the Korean Zombie. Does Bermudez have a bad tendency of ducking into shots? Stevens and now the Korean Zombie timed it perfectly. His reactive takedowns appear readable. And, you know, and obviously that's something that any good coach is going to inform their fighter of tendencies that you see in a fight. And obviously Dennis is going to have to go back and look at himself. And, you know, a lot of thing that you hear from fighters is, as much as you're breaking down your opponent's tape, you're breaking down your own tape in terms of, you know, telltale signs in terms of what's next. The Yair Rodriguez fight, I don't think I would go that route. I think because that's a matchup that, you know, maybe you can build both those guys up down the road. I do like the Cub Swanson Korean Zombie fight. You know, I think for the Korean Zombie, he's got to get a top five guy. Yair Rodriguez is not a top five guy right now, but and Dana White said that win sealed the deal. They're going to Korea sometime in 2017, and you know with Doo Ho Choi there as well. But if I'm looking at the Korean Zombie, I would go more the Cub Swanson matchup than I would the Yair Rodriguez matchup.
Yeah, I mean that's what we're talking about if I'm the Korean Zombie's perspective, right? Because, you know, from his perspective, that year fight is so not awesome. But from a year's perspective, that is a phenomenal fight. That puts him in a position to really leapfrog a lot of guys. And it's interesting, you know, where will we see Chan Sung Jung in the fabled UFC rankings? I think it's probably right where Yair is, to be completely honest. Maybe above Charles Oliveira at number 7. I'm glad you mentioned Dominic Cruz, by the way. That was another guy who really returned and looked great and immediately was a part of the title picture. So you could talk me into a Cub Swanson fight in Korea would be phenomenal. The other fight that I would love to see, and to be completely honest with you, all these fights sound amazing in my head when I play them out. Are you kidding me? Korean Zombie versus Yair Rodriguez, Korean Zombie versus Cub Swanson. I would say something you could put on literally like Fox would be Anthony Pettis versus the Korean Zombie.
Well, but Pettis is going back to 155.
Oh, that's a good point. I always forget that.
I think, yeah. Jeremy Stevens would be another one where you're talking about an action type fight. That would be one that I think you definitely would throw in there.
Yeah, that would be good. That would be good. I'm mad at your UFC rankings for having Anthony Pettis, by the way. But with that being said, the only other guy I could think of that's not a champion is Ricardo Lamas, who's above Cub Swanson. But to be honest with you, I don't think that one makes too much sense. I think that sweet spot with Swanson and Stevens is where you go for a fight like Korean Zombie, right? Like, it seems like you have the elite guys, which I wouldn't put Jung against quite yet. You have that middle tier of near contenders, and I think that's the sweet spot of where Jung deserves to fight. The question is talking those guys into traveling all the way to Korea for his next fight because
money talks.
Money does talk.
You throw enough money in front of somebody, they'll get on that plane. They'll go fight the Korean Zombie.
Yeah. I would be interested what the interest is for mixed martial arts. I know there's the Road FC promotion.
Here's a bigger question.
Yeah,
Korean Zombie is a guy that you know obviously with the hardcore MMA fan base he's a guy that people want to see, but is that a guy that you dare stick on say a Fight Pass card? Do you think that could raise subscriptions? I mean, it's kind of an interesting, you know, in terms of the time difference. Obviously that makes, you know, some things kind of unique for them. But if you're the UFC, I would almost think that you would want like a zombie matchup on Fox.
Well, let me look at it. What time is it in Korea right now? I think right now in Korea it's 12:01 a.m. and it's 9:01 a.m. right now. So I think that means it's nighttime there. I think for one, the Korean Zombie Fight Pass fight in Korea would be a smart idea. I really would. You know, you really want to use your resources as best as you can. And the case can be made that for Korean Zombie, his best use is as a TV main event on FS1. But I honestly think there may be a bigger net positive for having him on your Fight Pass. It's like a gentle reminder, hey guys, we have Fight Pass. Remember, you can get awesome cards on it. So to be completely real with you, I think that's the most likely prediction we can come out with heading into what comes next is the UFC going to Korea, South Korea to be clear, not North Korea, and main eventing it with Jung on Fight Pass. I think we can report that now, Jason. Are you confident enough to report it? Our imagination.
I mean, look, in terms of time difference, I mean, UFC Fight Pass would definitely makes kind of the most sense in terms of where they would go there. But, you know, who knows? You know, maybe they go, a different route there. But obviously a chance for them to build somebody there with the Korean Zombie. You know, you mentioned about the rankings. Where would you put the Zombie? I would put him somewhere in that 5 to 7 range.
Well, since I don't know if you've heard this, but Anthony Pettis is moving to lightweight, I would put him where Anthony Pettis is. I would put him at 6 behind Jeremy Stephens, in front of Oliveira and Yair Rodriguez. Man, Yair really drew the short end of the stick in terms of like his next fight was against BJ Penn. They didn't really elevate him in the rankings. But I would put him at 6. Where would you put him? Would you put him like at 5?
Yeah, I'd put him at 5. He's got to be right there. In terms of Dennis Bermudez, after the fight's over, you know, he's not sitting there and just going, oh, it's an early stoppage. He felt it was early. I did not feel it was an early stoppage. He was out. I mean, you could, you know, he did come up pretty quickly, but I personally had no problems with the stoppage Herb Dean had there.
Dude, there is like a threshold where if your body goes completely limp, you are done. That's it. I don't care how fast you recover. You are done. We are not like MMA corner where if you are half dead, we will send you back out there in the second round. Okay.
Oh, yo, did you see the Tachi Palace fight from Thursday?
No, did someone? Well,
oh, dude,
happened?
I mean, he's guy's getting submitted and he's sleeping and the referee is just like not doing anything. It was awful. It was awful.
Oh. Oh my gosh!
If you Google it, it's all over. It's on Twitter.
I'll look it up as we do this. But I feel like you know what I'm saying. Like there's that threshold where if you just go completely limp, it's over. No matter how quickly you recover, because we see these guys literally recover and fight the referee because they think they're still in the fight. To me, that's just their body talking. But if that light switch goes off, we're done because in this sport. Is too dangerous to allow guys to fight through, getting knocked out.
Well, I mean, right? You talk about scary knockouts. This fight card had 2 scary knockouts on it.
Oh,
you look at the Khalil Roundtree knockout there over Daniel Jolly in the opening round with those knees he landed with 52 seconds there in the first round. The other one, a knockout we're going to see on the UFC highlight reel for a long time. If Marcel Fortuna with that win over Anthony Hamilton, it was one of those things of the bar I was at watching it. There weren't many people watching the UFC fights, but it definitely got us all like, ooh, whoa.
That was – well, it's because there's that satisfaction of watching the big dude go down, and that was just – a Ric Flair style front face bump, man. And honestly, well, you know what probably hurt more than a punch was when Anthony Hamilton's head hit the damn ground, man. I mean, that was such a brutal knockout. And it was a sneaky one, too, because it wasn't like, you know, those punishing knockouts, just the Khalil Roundtree type knockout. This was like a more artistic one because it hit him right on the button and he just softly, like a big old redwood, just come on down. And, that was a beautiful knockout. And we are totally sadistic animals for enjoying violence. But, a big-time win for Marcel Fortuna, right? Like, now he gets to go back to bantamweight and compete where he should.
Yeah, we got, a question that came from Ryan Thomas, or more of a comment from Ryan Thomas for the most part. Was Anthony Hamilton appears done 3-5 with last loss to a big middleweight BJJ guy with no career knockouts? Does he get the pink slip? And is it deserved? If so, when you look at Anthony Hamilton, he's lost back-to-back fights. Of course, the knockout loss of this past Saturday night. Prior to that, he was submitted by Francis Ngannou. And, you look at his other losses in the UFC, Olenek, submission, Duffy, a knockout, and Abdurakhimov, a decision. it would not surprise me one bit the UFC parts ways with him. And I mean, when you're 1-3 in your last four fights at heavyweight, you know, and the fact of, you've lost both your last two fights in the first round, I think you shouldn't be shocked if the UFC decides to part ways with him.
Yeah. But I think, well, for one, this was the most enjoyable Anthony Hamilton fight I've ever seen. He was super aggressive. He literally, I mean, that's the reason why he lost, by the way, which is, you know, maybe the case should be made that Anthony Hamilton should have done the old boring playbook. But I would like to see him like fight one more time, Jason. I know he has the losses. I know this knockout loss was brutal. But again, we're talking about a division that desperately needs youth infusion. This was a fun fight. If he continues to fight like this, I think he's worth giving another shot. And to be completely real,
are you talking youth and Anthony Hamilton?
What, is he 36?
Yeah, he's 36. He'll be 37 in April.
Oh my god, 36?
Which he's is kind of young. Which is, I mean, let's be division. It is kind of young in heavyweight, 36 years old.
Oh, then cast him aside. That old no. Wow, I thought he was a 30-year-old.
No, he's 36 right now. Turns 37 here in 2 months.
By the way, I just saw that Tai Chi Palace thing. Holy moly! Just to give people, I mean, just Google it. But this dude is out for 22 seconds, and the referee Jason McCoy literally picks up the fighter's limp hand, drops it down, and allows him to continue to be choked for 5 more seconds. That is the craziest thing I've ever seen, Jason. Is this guy alive still?
Yeah, I was actually going to reach out to Andy Foster, the California State Athletic Commission, kind of ask him about that situation in terms of the referee of, you know.
Jason McCoy. I feel
what
like
do you, what do you do with that referee?
I'm sure he feels bad. I would hope so. But, I mean, I don't know. That's a weird thing, right, for mixed martial arts is when you have referees screw up, it's not like their intention is to screw up. Sometimes things just happen, but there should be consequences for errors, especially if there is a history of errors. I mean,
no question.
That's where you get into a gray area is if there is a consistency of inability to protect fighters. I mean, overall, there really wasn't anything on this card. Is there something on this card that comes to mind? The only thing that comes to mind that made me really upset, Jason, was the Curtis Blaydes Adam Milstead fight. The fact that Adam Milstead fought in that second round.
And I don't know if people, you know, and obviously that became a big topic of conversation on Saturday night, you know, in terms of, you know, what you're seeing on social media. And, you know, people were looking at Milstead's corner. Why do you let him go out there? Mark Cherico did a video interview with Flow Combat, basically saying that they didn't know and said that, hey, if we would have known his knee was messed up, we would not have sent him out there. You know, Adam said that he didn't tell his corner that his knee was messed up. You know, and Curtis Blaydes, obviously, I mean, he feels bad for, you know, that. I've seen a lot of knee injuries, Daniel. That's probably more than just a torn ACL, most likely. I mean, look, I am not a doctor, but that almost looks like he might have tore multiple ligaments in his knee. Just based on kind of how that all went down there. You know, hopefully it's not as severe as we think it is. But I would also go is, where is the doctor in this situation? After seeing what go on in the first round, you see him clearly, you know, wince, and it's shown on the replays. Where's the doctor for the Texas Athletic Commission here?
You want to listen to what you just asked?
I know, Texas and regulatory, Texas, yeah. But, I mean, it's...
Yeah, no, dude. I guess I tell you what. I will absolve the corner for blame if they were ignorant. You know, there is still part of me that's like, maybe notice the fact that he hurt his knee. You know, maybe communicate with him about it.
Yeah,
but I mean, that's a tough one, Jason, because like this dude suffered the injury in the first round. Fortunately, he was fighting Curtis Blaydes, so it would have been bad if he was fighting a striker. Still though, Curtis was throwing him all over the place. He looked great, but he was quite literally just like a duck, like an injured duck for a big old tiger ready to strike. This was rough to watch.
It was rough to watch because it looked like two guys who are in two different weight classes. You know, the thing with Curtis Blaydes is obviously his wrestling is tremendous. He's got that wrestling pedigree, but I think one of the things that when I look at Curtis long term is what happens when you go in there against a fighter and they stop all your takedown defense, and now he has to win with his striking.
Well,
that to me is a concern with him going forward.
He will have major issues, Jason. Although I do think if you look at the top 15 of the heavyweight division, I think you can make the case that the wrestling game of Curtis Blaydes may be enough to get him 4 or 5 victories in that top 15 if he uses his game plan correctly. But there are, you know, once you get down to the nitty gritty, I mean, a lot of these top level fighters are going to have the ability to defend the takedowns and then just outclass them on the feet. So to be completely looking at his future, I would say that the general analysis is he's going to have a lot of short-term success, but long-term, if he doesn't close the gap in the deficiencies in his other skills, there's a ceiling there. Now, there's always the opportunity to change that ceiling, and in every single fight is an opportunity to completely rupture that ceiling. I mean, look at the guy that beat Curtis Blaydes. Look at how the narrative of Francis Juanu has changed rapidly fight to fight. He's a guy I would have prescribed a much lower ceiling to, and he's come out and shattered it. So you never know, Jason. But present day, it's all about developing that stand-up. I will say he took advantage of facing a smaller type guy because his throws, the way he was manhandling him, that was highlight reel stuff. That was an exciting fight. I really enjoyed it, minus the injury, of course.
Yeah. It's a nasty injury, and you hope it's not as severe as we think. And it's probably going to be one of those things where it's probably going to take a couple of days before ultimately you find out how bad of a knee injury that is. But, you know, when I asked for questions for this post-fight podcast, most of the questions were related to the co-main event of this fight card. Felice Herrig gets a unanimous decision win over Alexa Grasso, 29-28, 29-28. In 30-27, and you know, you mentioned at the beginning of the show, you know, on the preview show, I think if this fight hits the ground, this is Felice's fight. And you know, one of the knocks on Felice has been, you know, she has that striking experience in her past, but really she's been more of, you know, a wrestling submission type fighter, you know, since, you know, coming into the UFC and the Ultimate Fighter. But this one, I was blown away with her performance. I did find it interesting in her post-fight press conference that she did with the media, which, by the way, I love the way the UFC does these now, you know, just because you can, you know, you have all the questions for one fighter in one video. You can kind of go on and see what they said. But it was interesting to me the fact that she said, you know, hey, paraphrasing what she said, fighting's number one, and she's kind of taken, you know, put everything else on the back burner, which, you know, Felice is a fighter that was, you know, she has done a great job of promoting herself throughout the years. There's no question about it. I mean, I think she already has like a million followers on Facebook. But, you know, I think a lot of us counted her out in this fight, and, you know, she derailed the hype train here of Alexa Grasso.
Oh, yeah. I think we were sleeping on the upside of Felice Herrig here in terms of marketing. Just because I think we were both thinking Felice was on the downswing, Jason. I thought the idea was maybe she'd peaked a bit too early. But now it's switching here with that win. Now you begin to look up and look at what Felice has done from a marketing standpoint. And you got to be real excited. You mentioned the following on Facebook. She's got 100K on Twitter. It's a bit harder to generate that following without a viral meme of Lady Gaga jumping off the roof of a stadium or something. But Felice is just right there for the UFC to promote in that division. And looking back at her career, the best performance of her career, I say it all the time, and it's always because the present is better. But, I mean, I would say best performance of her career because she went and she beat Alexa Grasso at what Grasso does best on the feet. And Herrig has never looked better. I didn't anticipate this at all. In projecting Herrig forward, if she fights like she did against Alexa Grasso, she's going to have a lot of success against a lot of fighters at the women's strawweight division. I mean, this was a complete and total 360 for the way we were thinking about Felice Herrig's career heading into that fight. We were talking about with the loss, maybe she steps away and does some other stuff. Now we're like, Felice Herrig is all in, and she's the potential is enormous.
Yeah, and Ryan Thomas, you know, said this to us. He says, Grasso overhyped, or was Felice in the best shape mentally, physically of her career, or both? I would say that this is more mentally Felice is in the right place. You know, she's talked about, you know, some of the stuff that she's had in the past. You know, I don't think I would use the term overhyped with Grasso. I think maybe the UFC put her in, should have given her a lesser fight than what she had here.
No, I think this was the perfect fight, dude. I really do. I really think this was the fight that made the most sense given what we saw. I just think both the UFC and myself included did not do the proper calculation on the skill level of Felice Herrig in 2017. I think that expectation of how she was going to fight was not an expectation for the UFC. And that's the equation that it's hard to like do Monday morning quarterback and criticize the matchup, dude. I think this was the perfect fight for Alexa.
In terms of Felice Herrig, you know, yeah. we always naturally talk about what's ahead for her. I mean, she came in this fight not ranked. She'll clearly be ranked in the top 15, you know, when new rankings come out. When you look at the top 10, tell me a fighter you would say you think Herrig beats. 10, Paige VanZant. We've already seen that fight. Yes, she wants a rematch. You know, I don't think the UFC goes that route. Number 9, Marina Moroz.
Yeah.
You would pick Felice Herrig?
Yeah, I would pick Felice Herrig.
Joanne Calderwood.
That's a tough one, Jason. I would go Calderwood, but I think you're going to see, like, razor-thin odds in that fight.
That to me smells of like a split decision.
yeah, you can just see fights and know they're going to split.
Michelle Waterson.
Oh man, that's a tough one, but I think Waterson has to be the favorite there in that one.
Yeah,
but I can see, you know, Felice making it tough. I think that's there's a big difference when you get to Waterson.
Yeah, that becomes Felice talked about the fact that she was supposed to fight Waterson at one point and ultimately didn't happen. And then it's Tisha Torres, Jessica Andrade, Rose Namajunas, Carlos Barza, Carolina and Claudia. I would not pick her against any of those fighters.
No, she looked great, but she has not. Maybe Tisha Torres, to be honest. But other than that, no, I wouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, and so it's obviously a huge win for Felice Herrig. And this comment came in from at Tim Frontkick. He says, "My theory: Grasso was injured for the Herrig fight. One, her movement, jab, counters, defense were mostly absent. She was way off. Two, you got to remember Grasso pulled out of two fights at Invicta due to injury. Did she really want to pull out of the co-main event? Three, Felice isn't a super explosive athlete to make Grasso look like that in the first round. Something doesn't add up." You know, I mean, you know, who knows whether she, you know, look, I think majority of fighters go into fights injured. You know, sometimes just, and fighters will tell you this, you know, sometimes you just walk to the cage or maybe it's even your warm up. You just don't feel it. You know, for whatever reason, you just can't get going.
Yeah. The way, was it Rashad Evans, the way he looked against Little Nog, that was like the perfect, back in the day, that was the perfect kind of example of a guy not feeling it and losing to a fighter he should not have. It's, you know, unless Alexa comes out and talks about her injuries, it would be real hard for us to come out here and project injuries on her. You know, we will become Tito Ortiz's in the sense of every time we get a prediction wrong, we blame it on injuries. We can't do that. Maybe she was injured. She did look slightly different. She didn't look as crisp as she usually does in terms of her offense. It wasn't firing in all cylinders, so maybe you can point to an injury. I'm sure there's a lot of pressure in the co-main event, biggest opportunity of her life not to step down. But with all that being said, if Felice Herrig took on a punching bag, that was still impressive from her. I mean, just from her own point of view, just watching her fight the entire time, her movement, her reaction time, her offense and defense was a big step up. So, again, we had the question, was Alexa overhyped? I think that's too dramatic. I think she was slightly hyped too much. But I think the storyline of this fight deserves to be, at 32 years old, Felice Herrig is starting to peak here.
Wow, Felice is 32?
Yeah.
I mean, she has been around for a while.
Yeah, let me double check that. Yeah, 32 years old.
Well, I just looked her up. We actually have the same birthday, September 18th.
Wow, that's crazy. Are you also 32?
No, I am not 32 years old. No.
Oh, okay.
I am 35.
Oh man, 35.
I know. I'm an old one. Yeah, it's kind of like you know, I was out watching the fights on Saturday night, which it was you know, a little unique because I thought maybe more people would maybe be out watching the fights, and it was me and two of my buddies. We were sitting at one table watching the fights. And there were two guys sitting at the bar that were watching the fights. That was about it. You know, it was at a place that I wouldn't call it upscale. It was, you know.
You were at Hooters.
No, it was not at Hooters. I was at a tavern that it's a little more expensive to drink. You know, you're probably paying about $1 or $2 more a drink than you would at, you know, just basically like, okay, a Hooters or a Buffalo Wild Wings type place.
Yeah.
I mean, that could scare away the younger audience who maybe is looking for a little bit of a cheaper drink. But, you know, there was a guy working security at the bar. And so he was pretty much just watching the fights with us. Yeah. It's interesting the way, when you go out for a fight card, and I've really found myself, I used to always be that reporter that just sat at home, watched the fights, monitor social media, you know, that type of thing. But I've really grown to kind of love the fact of, you know, whether it's going over somebody's house to watch the fights or going out and watching the fights, because the narrative of the fight card is a lot different for the most part when you go out as opposed to, you know, if you're sitting at home and you're monitoring Twitter. And honestly, a perfect example of that was Ovince St. Preux and Volkan Oezdemir. On social media, it was about, oh man, this fight is awful. Don't disagree with that. But for you know, just a common sports fan sitting in the bar, they don't care that two guys are throwing punches that aren't exactly the most technical. That they're just throwing, and they love that.
Wow, that's actually a nice little perspective there, because I wasn't thinking that was a classic, but that does jive with what I would assume people would like that aren't snobs about it, you know, or snobs is such a condescending term to deem something, but I will say that, yeah, like, people generally enjoy action, and so something like that, the way we perceive it is so not how most people perceive it. And that's interesting. I didn't watch that fight thing, instant classic, but
no, it was I had it 29-28 for OSP.
I had it for Oezdemir. I thought he won.
I think it's, you know, it's not going to go into one of the, you know, awful decisions of 2017. It was a close fight, you know, and I don't, you know, if you go Oezdemir, I have no problem with that. I mean, I think it was a close fight there.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I think impressed me with Oezdemir is I thought he took some massive shots, and he just kept coming, you know. And as I was watching the fight, one of the things that just really jumped out to me about Ovince St. Preux, and I think that, obviously, you talk about fighters who probably lost the most. I think OSP's got to be the fighter that probably lost the most on this card in terms of where you thought of him in terms of top 10 at 205 and to where you think of him now. But one of the things that really jumped out to me is a lot of times when he is backpedaling, his hands are down. And I'm like, someone, you know, I go, against the upper-level fighters, they're going to take advantage of that. And I thought Volkan, you know, was taking advantage of that. And Ryan Thomas asked this. He goes, with improved cardio and Henry Hoof in his corner, what is Oezdemir's ceiling? Looked technically sound round one, but gassed badly and got sloppy. Did OSP Oezdemir fight? Also highlight the strange decision to not keep Serkinov to a lesser extent Bader. Now, in terms of Serkinov, that is a situation where his contract expired. My understanding is the UFC offered him a contract. He did not accept the terms of that deal, which, you know, that's on him. And, of course, Ryan Bader not officially announced that he has signed with Bellator, but Dana White this past weekend in Houston said that, you know, they're letting Bader walk. They're Bader came to a contract agreement with Bellator, and Dana basically, it basically sounded like Dana knew from the start that Ryan Bader didn't want to come back to the UFC, essentially. And I know a lot of people are going to be like, oh man, the UFC let him go. I'm not shocked by this. And I don't know why people are surprised that the UFC let Ryan Bader walk.
I tell you why, because Ovince St. Preux is the sixth ranked 205er heading in
now,
this card.
Now, look, I think Misha Serkinov, that's a guy you want to keep around.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a guy you need to keep around, because he is a fighter that you've built up. And right before you get to see whether or not that built up, it ends in a title shot or whatever, a loss, if he jets, that's when you start to get scared, because when the question is, what is Volkan Ozdemir's upside? I'm like, well, probably not high. But then you look at the top 15 in light heavyweight, and you're like, wait a second. I could see him beating Patrick Cummins and 12th-ranked John Vellante and 11th-ranked Little No. Like, I could see him climbing up into the top 10. That is crazy. That is unacceptable, I think, if you're the UFC. This is a division that has serious – and I did not know Bader's still in the rankings, too.
Yeah, he's
up a spot.
Yeah, he's still in the rankings. I think in, you know, in terms of – you know, and obviously we'll have a preview show later on this week – one of the things I am probably most interested about UFC 208, and people may think I'm crazy, Jerry Conner. This is a guy that came in the UFC as a heavyweight, now at 205. He's even mentioned about maybe going down to 185, but he takes on Glover Teixeira on Saturday night in Brooklyn. If he goes out there and he beats Glover Teixeira, the UFC might have just found a new guy at 205. And maybe if you're UFC, maybe that's what you're hoping for. Maybe you're hoping for a Jerry Conner knockout win.
Oh, dude, you are hoping for a Jared Cannonier knockout win. There's no doubt about it. You want a fresh face, and you want a guy to win impressively. I did not realize that fight was on, actually. I knew Jacare, I knew Spider, and I knew the main event. And not realize Jared Cannonier.
Yeah, I remember I talked about last post-fight show we did. It's one of the things I love about, you know, just, you know, hanging out with the boys and watching the fights is the conversations we were having. That Jacare-Tim Boach matchup did come up.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all just kind of laughing about it. Like, it's just a fight for Jacare to get her paycheck.
Yeah.
We'll talk more about UFC 208 as I've started kind of dive into that card already.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm going, okay, what interests me about this fight card? I'm not too keen of watching this fight on pay-per-view. I'm just, that's just being honest about it. You know, me and my boys, we're going to get together. We each put in $20 and, you know, we enjoy the fights together. But when I look at what interests me the most, I mean, I think Holm and De Romaname is going to be a fun, exciting fight. I think it's going to be a fight that ultimately just ends up being a kickboxing matchup, most likely. But then I look at that fight card and say, well, what else interests me? You know, the upside of Jared Conner is something that interests me. I think Dustin Poirier and Jim Miller, which is going to open up the pay-per-view, I think that's going to be a fun fight to watch. You know, Islam Makhachev, who's going to be on the preliminary card, I'm interested to see how he performs. You know, Ian McCall, you know, he's got a tough matchup against Jared Brooks. That is not a gimme fight for Ian McCall. And when I asked Ian McCall, I said, hey, you think a win here gets you a title shot? He's like, oh, no, man, I'm going to need like 3 wins. But if Ian McCall goes out there and has a devastating victory, I would not be shocked if he's fighting Demetrius Johnson next. So to me, that's, I'm always looking at of what interests me, you know, going forward into a fight card. You know, so we'll see if those fights end up delivering. But, you know, 205, you know, Volkan Ozdemir, you mentioned, you look at that top 15. I would have no problems if he was number 15th guy come up this week.
Yeah, move. Yeah, I mean, especially if they take out Ryan Bader, he's got to be the 15th guy. I mean, this is going to be a pretty big drop for OSP. And Jared Conner is in a position to really vault up the rankings as well. So,
I mean, can we find a new title challenger at 205?
I mean.
So we know we have Cormier and Rumble in the beginning of April at 210.
Okay.
We know, we expect Jon Jones to be back in July as long as there's no other issues. So the winner of that fight gets Jon Jones. So what happens after that at 205?
That's a good question.
Are we talking about Alexander Gustafsson somehow finding himself back into a title shot again?
Unless, literally, Anderson, Serkinov, and Jared Conner are your great hopes to circumvent that process. But in all likelihood, it does look like Gustafsson's the guy, right? Like,
I mean,
who else can you make the case for?
Like, you look at 205, and there's, you have the elite who, you know, Jones, Cormier, Rumble, and I think, you know, Gustafsson's right there, but I don't know if Gustafsson can beat any of those three guys. Maybe on his best night, he can. But we've seen in the what's that next tier? Is it the Jimmy Manawas? I mean, is there really two tiers? It's the elite, and then there's everybody else.
I mean, that's why I know he has a fight booked at middleweight. But that's why if you're in Chris Weidman's corner, you're like, maybe the move up wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. Because
let's be honest, who's Chris Weidman going to fight at UFC 210? I mean, he's scheduled against Gegard Mousasi, but we know the political angle of what's going on there, and obviously there's some concerns from the Mousasi camp that maybe he won't be able to get to Buffalo.
Wait, where's Mousasi from?
I believe he was born in Iran.
Dude, there is no way that he was born in Iran.
Because I remember that was the feeling was, would there be an issue because of where he was born that he may have an issue getting into the United States?
I would be okay. Well,
and look, I mean, and we don't want to sit here and talk politics, but
no, but this is the main event. I mean, not a main event, but a fight not happening.
Yeah, I mean, but this is a problem not just for the UFC. It's a problem for Bellator. It's a problem for the World Series of Fighting and any other MMA promotion that is putting on fights that have fighters out that live outside of the United States. That this is something that they have to deal with.
Dude, that is, I did not think about that. That is a crazy thing. And that's April 8th. I think that, you know, this ban is supposed to be for 90 days or whatever. I mean, the only thing you can say is Dana White has Donald Trump's phone number in his cell phone. And he can, I mean, it didn't seem like Dana White was too concerned about this, right? When he was asked about it.
Yeah, I did see him, but I think it has to naturally be a concern for you for any MMA promotion.
For anybody that's not Dana White, I feel like Dana White.
I've seen, you know, the NBA is very concerned about it because of you know, a handful of players.
They've got Thon Maker, Luol Deng. Just going to Canada and coming back is a concern, although I think thus far what you're seeing is a lot of people getting stopped when they come from those seven countries. But I also saw something where it's like 100,000 visas were revoked. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
So, I mean, basically, when you look at what's happening, there's a whole lot of gray area of a real lack of idea what's taking place. And I mean, this is crazy because, I mean, imagine if we were hosting the Olympics, you know.
Yeah,
what would we do then? But even now, today, in reality, what are we going to do? What's going to happen to Gegard?
Well, I saw USA Wrestling was supposed to have a meet over in Iran, and they're not going to be allowed to come in.
Yeah, it's crazy, dude.
Yeah, I'd say that was one of the things on Sunday night that I was, for the most part, pretty amazed by, is that we didn't have a lot of, you know, there were some commercials that were definitely politically driven. But I was surprised that we didn't see a lot of, because, you know, we talk about, you know, people use sports as a way to kind of escape everything that is going on. I mean, you know, look, we were sitting there watching the fights on Saturday night. Politics did come up, you know, and the way we were kind of talking about it was, it's like, man, you use sports as a way to get away from those things. But it's, man, right now you can't get away from it. It's so crazy. I mean, I think about, you know, my office, one of my computer screens I have here is on TweetDeck. And, I occasionally look over, see what people are saying. And, you know, you got a really good chance you're going to see someone talking about politics.
Well, okay, so here's the most interesting thing about this whole thing is you have a crazy time politically. But you know who is the one person that is it that most benefits from this time is the people telling you the news on TV selling advertisements.
Oh.
So it's in their best interest to perpetuate this. And to be completely honest, they have not needed any help whatsoever. I mean, what's transpired is incredibly polarizing. But I mean, this has been, I've never watched more cable news than I have in the past 6 months, Jason. Every morning I'm switching between that or ESPN.
Yeah, the best job probably in America right now is to be selling advertising for CNN or Fox or MSNBC or any one of those channels.
Oh, dude, I mean, yeah, I mean, that is something that you need to have conversations about. Is, you know, this is a big boom.
If you have a commission based job selling advertising for those networks, times are probably pretty good right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one guy who does not care what's happening as long as he can pay off that mortgage. I mean, you know, when you talk about political statements, I was surprised that Lady Gaga didn't do anything.
We were having that conversation on Saturday night, and I said, I about guarantee you there's something in her contract about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, there was a lot of commercials. Not a lot, I'm sorry. Only one that I saw, but like a there was a commercial for like Lumber 84 that told a story of like an immigrant.
Yeah, and apparently there was one the I guess the commercial that was originally planned was they basically got shot down for and cause yeah, we're recording this here on Monday morning. I was watching one of the local news stations here in Tampa and they were talking about it and they put the full commercial and they put like a disclaimer, you know, commercial that was not suitable for TV up on their website.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good clicking. Like you want to click on something like that. Ooh, like you could see GoDaddy, but you couldn't see this. I got to click on this. But I mean, you got to know. I mean, this was on Fox, so there's certainly a.
Well, I saw because that game went to overtime, Fox made an additional $20 million in advertising.
$20 million?
Yeah, because of the extra commercials.
I bet
they're
hoping for more possessions than just one.
Yeah, yeah. But but in terms of and going back to the upside of Volkan Oezdemir, top 6-7.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you look at where OSP is, right? And you're like, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, you can't see him going much higher. But, I mean, look, he's training in South Florida at the Combat Club under Henry Hoof. And you know, look, if he can improve that gas tank, we'll see what happens there. But, you know, a big win for him and obviously a huge loss there for Ovince St. Preux. Also on the main card, James Vick gets a win over Abel Trujillo via submission. I'm still amazed that the submission didn't come in the second round when he had that choke on tight. So you got to give Abel Trujillo credit there. And really, the length was the key for James Vick there. Also, Jessica Andrade gets a unanimous decision win over Angela Hill. Locks up her spot to face on Joanna Jędrzejczyk. So we'll see when that happens. Also, this fight card saw Chad Skelly, Ricardo Ramos, Tisha Torres, and Nico Price all get wins there. Nico Price right there at the end of the second round with a knockout where basically it literally knocked him out right as the horn, right before the horn sounded there. In terms of Jessica Andrade, we got this. This is from Ryan Thomas. It says Andrade next for strawweight title fight. Does her pressure boxing work against a sharpshooter like Joanna? I don't know if it works against Joanna, but I'm interested to see how stylistically that fight plays out.
Yes, that's the perfect answer. I'm glad we're digging into that one because I thought that was the other storyline was Jessica Andrade single-handedly made that the fight of the night, Jason. I mean, that was a great fight.
That was a fun fight to watch.
Oh, phenomenal. Angela Hill traded. But, I mean, this was all about why Andrade is just such a remarkable fighter to watch. Just the pressure boxing. She never gives up an inch. The volume is there. She's going to make things difficult for Joanna Jędrzejczyk. I always love it when champions have unique challengers that aren't afraid to dictate how the fight plays out. It may end with you getting knocked out. I think Joanna is undoubtedly the favorite because when you look at the style of Andrade, there are moments where you're like, ooh, that is a right for a counter. But, I mean, that's a marketable fight, Jason. Not a big-time marketable fight, but you can certainly market the idea of Andrade just running through the division, and that continued against Angela Hill. I mean, like I said, she put on a great fight, and she looked great. She received some counters. I think that's going to be an issue for her. But Jessica Andrade, to me, was one of the kind of stars on this card.
We got this comment from Rodney via the MMAReport.com saying this. I have seen posts of Angela Hill saying she's in the UFC for a long haul, and it's nice for her to want that. But reality shows she is now 0-3 against top 10 UFC strawweight opponents she has faced in the UFC octagon, and she hasn't even won one round in those fights. Angela Hill needs to be back in Invicta FC or on the regional circuit so she can develop into a more well-rounded MMA fighter. So when she does move back up to the UFC, she will better be suited to use her tools and actually give her a chance of actually winning a fight in the UFC. And yes, I know she won one fight in the UFC. Angela Hill runs her mouth about she doesn't think Michelle Waterson deserves a title shot, and she thinks Joanna Jędrzejczyk would be a better matchup for her than Jessica Andrade was for her. And talking about undeserved push given to Paige VanZant and so other so-called beautiful women in the UFC. Yet Angela Hill keeps not looking at the fact that she keeps losing fights in the UFC octagon a bit against top 10 opponents. Since all were coming off losses, the UFC should match up Paige VanZant against Angela Hill against Paige VanZant or even Alexa Grasso. So Angela Hill can actually see where she stands in the UFC rankings. I mean, I think in terms of Angela Hill, look, this was, I mean, you're talking about fighting one of the top challengers at 115 pounds. I think you give her someone in that 10 to 15 range to kind of really see where she's at. But, I mean, this is the other side, and this is the business side of MMA. You want to go fight Invicta or fight in the UFC? We're probably talking about, you know, in Invicta, maybe she's only making 3-3 or 4-4. Where in the UFC, you're making 10-10. That's a big difference.
Yeah, that is literally three fights. A three-fight difference and for one paycheck in the UFC. Look, I think she can stick around, Jason. She's got great skills. She showcased nice stuff here. And I think comparing her to the fighters towards the end of that bottom of the 15, you're looking at victory. So, Angela Hill has shown great fight development, and I think she should stick around the UFC. I think she will want to, and I think she'll have a moderate amount of success.
Yeah, but, Jessica Andrade. I'm thinking maybe co-main event of that Dallas pay-per-view in May.
Yeah, what's the main event on that one?
They haven't announced yet.
There's
talk that it could be JDS and Miocic for the heavyweight title.
Okay, I tell you what, that's good. JDS, Miocic. I'm assuming that's going to be in the where the Mavericks play, the American Airlines Center or something like that. Yeah, give that the co-main event slot, and hopefully people will watch that fight card. I don't know if they will. JDS Miocic is a good fight for me and you, but you talk about those casuals, they can't name you who the heavyweight champion is.
No, they can't. In terms of the rest of this card, we start to kind of wrap up this post-fight show. I was really impressed with Ricardo Ramos. He's obviously known for his BJJ, but he did do a little BJJ in this fight. But it was good to see him sit there and have a little bit of a striking matchup there. So that's one guy that really jumped out to me.
Yeah. The guy who jumped out to me was Chaz Skelly. Pretty big beatdown of Chris Grusmacher. All about the wrestling, all about the grappling. Didn't really show too much differently. Tisha solidly beat Beck Rollins. Just an awful, awful night for Beck Rollins. Missing weight, flipping off people, not handling the loss well. So, the guy who stood out was Skelly. Tisha had some ring rust. She returned to form. Glad you mentioned Ramos. He looked good, and Tanaka was not making it easy for him. He was moving away a lot.
Yeah, so, that's, of course, we got UFC 208 coming up on Saturday night at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. We'll have a preview show later on this week. We did get two questions not related to what happened at UFC Fight Night 104. First up, Ryan Thomas said, he goes, news came out prior to Houston that Thiago Tavares has left the UFC. I want to see Tavares versus Cron Gracie in Ryzen. Thoughts? I have no issues with that one. We'll see what happens with Thiago Tavares. And also, we got asked from @PBCFan1 our thoughts on Frank Shamrock not being in the UFC Hall of Fame. I mean, look, I think that the odds of Frank Shamrock ever getting in the UFC Hall of Fame are very unlikely. And I think a lot of that has to do with personal feelings more than anything else. But he should be there. I think there's no question. When you talk about the history of MMA, Frank Shamrock is a part of that, and you just can't ignore him.
Yeah, I think he will be in there 15 years from now, and there are different people.
When Dana White's not the president of the UFC?
Totally. He will not. That day will not happen. I mean, maybe it will. In all likelihood, it won't. But time heals all wounds unless you're like Curt Schilling and you just do a flamethrower to your reputation based on your opinions. But for Frank Shamrock, he hasn't really done that for like the next group of people that take care of the UFC. So hopefully they got their history books. They have their Jonathan Snowden Total MMA book on their bookshelf. They can read it and understand the role someone like Frank Shamrock played. Because, I mean, this was a guy who was pound for pound the best fighter in the world for a given period of time. He was marketable. I mean, Strikeforce was built around him. I think he should be in the UFC Hall of Fame. Literally, he should have been in the UFC Hall of Fame 10 years ago. But it won't happen as long as the bald man is in charge.
Yeah. I mean, he definitely should be there. But, of course, we'll have a preview show later on this week to talk about UFC 208, which goes down on Saturday night. So that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Post Fight Podcast. Of course, you can always hear it on RadioInfluence.com, iTunes, and Stitcher. Just search The MMA Report. Of course, you can follow myself on Twitter at Jason_Floyd. Call Daniel on Twitter at Daniel Galvan, DGG.
This is Vincent Hill. You've seen me on CNN, HLN with Nancy Grace, Al Jazeera, and True Crime with Aphrodite Jones, just to name a few. Now I've got my own show on Radio Influence, and I'll be taking you beyond the badge. I'll take you behind the scenes and into the minds of those following and investigating America's top news stories. Beyond the Badge with me, Vincent Hill, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and the Radio Influence family. Let's enjoy this ride as I take you beyond the badge.